Okay. Continuing this discussion, morbid discussion, but it's a good time for it, 10 o'clock at night. Are there fates worse than death, end of life, and halacha? Last time we went through some primary sources. We went through Gemara's about the topic of end of life issues, things like euthanasia and suicide and dealing with pain and suffering at the end. Let's just review quickly the Gemara's that we saw. And then we'll look at some fascinating points in halacha and tshuvas by contemporary gedolim. So first, by far the most famous is the Gemara that tells the story about Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi and his death. He was very sick, probably intestinal issues, and he and his talmidim were davening for him that he shouldn't die, including his maidservant as well was davening for him. But then when she saw how painful it was for him to keep going into the bathroom, taking off his tefillin, putting them back on afterwards, she saw that he was suffering greatly, and so she decided to switch teams, and she was on the side of heaven to take Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi away, and she threw a vessel which distracted the students and caused them to stop davening for a few seconds, and Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi passed away. Then there was a story of the Gemara in Sota that tells the story about the city of Luz, where nobody ever died natural or unnatural deaths. And so how did anybody actually expire? People, when they felt that their life was over, that they'd reached the end of their life, whatever that means, they would go outside the city walls and they would die. Gemara Avodah Zarah talks about Rabbi Chanina ben Tradyon, one of the Asar HaHorugei Malchus, who was killed by the Romans. He was taken out to be executed, and he was wrapped in a Torah scroll and burning, and they also put these sponges on him to prevent him from dying quickly. And the executioner, first the students wanted him to open his mouth so that the fire would enter his mouth and kill him instantly. And he refused. He said, I'm not going to end my life early. But then the executioner asked, you know, what happens if I assist you by letting you die faster? Can I get credit for that? And Rabbi Chaim ben Tradyon said, absolutely. And that's what he did. And it says that the executioner went into Olam Haba. Then the Gemara and Bava Kama. It talks about how Rabbi Yochanan, after the death of Reish Lakish, he was inconsolable. They tried to arrange new chavrusas for him, but the new chavrusas they gave him, Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, he was kind of a yes man. He would agree with everything Rabbi Yochanan said, which annoyed Rabbi Yochanan. He said, you know, I miss Reish Lakish, who would challenge me and make me sharper. And so he said, you know, I can't believe you were taken from me. He became so sick and upset that the rabbi is actually, in a reversal of what happened to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, they actually pray for his death, that Hashem should take him away and give him mercy and take his soul. And that's what happened. And then finally, the Gemara Nadarim tells a story about Rabbi Akiva, who's one of his students, became sick and nobody would visit him. Rabbi Akiva went to visit him and he brought his students in, and the students swept and sprinkled water on the dirt floor, making his house, you know, more hospitable and nice. And the student became better. And he said to Rabbi Akiva and the people who came with him that, you know, you revived me. And that Gemara talks about how visiting an ill person actually causes the person to feel better and you can save their life. But at the end, it says, so what does that mean? If you don't visit the ill person, then it's like you're killing them, or it's like you're praying that they die. What does that mean? It says, no. It just means that if you don't visit him, you won't pray that he dies or that he lives. And therefore, you missed out the opportunity. And the Ran jumps in over there. First time we're looking at a Rishon, the Ran jumps in over there and says, you know, remember what happened with Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi's maidservant? It says, based on this Gemara and that Gemara, we find out that sometimes it's appropriate to actually pray that a person's suffering should end and that their life should end, rather than pray that they should get better. That was what we ended with last time. Okay? Everybody remember what we all said last time? We good? Okay. We're ready to jump into the halacha. Jake, you have your seatbelt on. You ready? Good. Okay, so let's see at the Piskei Halacha. So before we go to the contemporary poskim, let's just look a little bit. You know, we read stories, but how does the black letter halacha deal with end of life? So we have two pseudo-Tanaic sources. These are very late Tanaic sources. They may even be Gaonim. Masechet Smachos is actually traditionally understood as being from the Gaonim, and not really from the Tanaim, but based on Tanaic sources. It says, Hagoses, Harehu Kechai L'chol Davar. Hagoses is a person who's really at their deathbed, the final breaths, but we still treat him as being alive completely. Okay, for us, there is a fine line between death and life. There's no gray area. There's no space where the person is both or either or in between. They're either alive or they're dead. Zokek liyibum opotr min ayibum. Machal trumo oposo min atrum. Nochal manchal, he's alive, l'kol davar. Pirish mimenu ever kever min achai, basar kevasar min achai. Okay, he's alive. Ad shah sheyamot, until he dies. Then it says, be'evu rabati tanya, so this is actually quoting it to make source. Same thing, but then it gives you directions about how to treat him. Ein koshrin et lechayo, ve'ein sochin oto, ve'ein medichin oto. We don't anoint him, we don't wash him, ve'ein pokikin et nekavav, we don't stop up his nekavim, we don't prevent him from going to the bathroom, ve'ein shomtin et akar mitachta. This is critical, we don't take away the pillow from underneath his head. We don't move him onto sand or onto cheres. We don't put anything on his stomach. We don't start playing music. We don't close his eyes until he actually completely passes away, until he expires. And if you do close his eyes because you think that he's about to die, it's like you're killing him. Okay? So what's the purpose of all of this? What's the purpose of, what would you say is the purpose of all of these directives? Everybody is muted. I can't hear anybody.
Repeat the question, please.
What's the purpose of all this, of this whole Mishnah? What are these halachos telling us?
A person is, there is no gray area. The person is either alive or he's dead.
Right. And anybody who...
A way to treat a person that is dying. I mean, it's more likely seems to me like, if you think that you can, I don't know, in a certain situation, take him out of his bed or behave in a certain way. No, be careful. You have to treat him with respect. More on the, I see it from more from that aspect.
Treat him just with respect.
More than, I mean.
It sounds like even more. If you don't treat him,
really take care of him until the very last minute.
And if you do anything that.
I think it's more actually, you can't, don't do anything that will remotely, I mean, will affect anything to do with the time of that he's alive. I don't know how to, that means you can't do anything to shorten his life in any way. It means
right.
Don't breathe near him. Don't, whatever you do, don't shorten his life.
Yeah, fair. And that's how the Shulchan Aruch understands this. Because Shulchan Aruch basically takes all of these phrases.
Which means also don't take off life support.
Hold on, let's pull
the switch.
Yeah, you're jumping 1,000 years in the future. 1,500 years in the future. Let's jump only 1,000 years in the future, okay? To the Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Yosef Karo, as he's codifying this, so he says, "V'chein asur ligrom lamet shiamut mehera." You cannot cause him to die more quickly. Now, there is a little bit of a strangeness over here because he calls him a mate and he's not dead. So that's a little bit strange, but okay, fine. You're not allowed to cause the person to die any more quickly than he will naturally. Kigon. Like, if you have a person who's, you know, his life is being extended, he's a goses for a very long time, and it's like his soul cannot leave his body. Asurli hishamet. You cannot remove the pillow from underneath his head or the blanket. Now the Shulchan Aruch does something strange because he doesn't seem this. If I would have read this just the Mishnah by itself, I would have said, yeah, removing the pillow makes him less comfortable and therefore, you know, or jostles him and that causes him to die, but. The Shulchan Aruch says, why would you move the pillow? Can anybody understand why would you think to move the pillow? What does he seem to be saying? Because there might be feathers in the pillow which cause this. Cause what?
A change in his lifespan.
So it seems like what he's saying is that there are people that think that the feathers in the pillow are what's causing him to not die. It's what's causing his soul to remain in his body. I don't know whether this is a medical thing or a mystical thing. Whatever it is, you want to remove the car because you want to give him mercy. You want him to be, his soul to be able to leave his body. So Shulchan Aruch says you can't do that. V'chein asur lasum maftechot beit haKnesset tachat rosho kedei sheyipared. You can't put, I don't know how this works, you can't put the keys to the Beit Knesset next to his head so that he'll die. I don't know. I don't want to get into these what these rituals might mean. I have no idea. But the point is, can't do anything that might hasten his death. Aval, im yesham davar shegorem ikuv yitziat nefesh. If there is something there that's causing his nefesh to not go, kegon, sheyesh samuch lato bayit kol dofek kegon chotev yitzim, or sheyesh melech alishano ve'elu miyakvim yitziat nefesh. If there's something there that's causing him to not be able to die, so for example, a sound outside the room, or he's got some kind of salt or something on his tongue, and that's kind of, I guess it's like smelling salts almost, it's reviving him. Mutar lahasiro misham. That you're allowed to remove. De'ein bazeh ma'aseh klal, ela shemisir hamoneya. Because here you're not doing something to the mate, or to the person, you're removing something that's preventing him from dying. Now, this is not my question. The Taz asked
what's
the question.
What's a big opening?
What's the difference? What's the difference between these cases? Whether I remove the pillow, whether I stop the sound. How do we explain what the difference is between these two different actions? In what case am I hastening his death? And in what case am I simply removing something that's preventing him from dying? This is the question that bothered many of the Achronim. By the way, I'm sorry, I didn't make this clear. This is actually not the Shulchan Aruch. This is all the Ramah. This is all Moshe Isserles. So the Achronim jump in over here. Unless anybody have any suggestions conceptually to figure out what could be the difference between these two, all these different actions a person might do.
It's almost as if some of these things are something that are holding the person in this world. They are keeping his soul from leaving, hearing sounds that he likes or that he's used to, smelling things that have a pleasant or even just a familiar odor.
Okay. And then how is that different than removing the pillow or putting these keys next to
his head? I don't know. That seems more bodily function than this is really senses. This is sensory, the things that you mentioned.
Okay. All right. So go ahead, Jake.
One's a removal of something good. Right. And I can't make sense of it, but maybe one's a removal of something good and one is a removal of something bad. I can't define the categories, but if you were to say you can remove good in certain instances, and you can remove bad because it's prolonging life, you could probably divide something like that.
Okay. Okay, so let's see what the Achronim try to do. So the Taz, he brings this up. Perish avagav de mitam ze yesh heter la sot gain, the ha ein osakir of mita, alamisir monea, itziat nefesh, kedekata vachakach, mikom vakom kan asur. Kevan shaydeze meziz gufo v'havakir of mita v'yadayim. So the Taz actually circumvents the issue. He says, you know what? The truth is, the problematic one over here is really the fact that I can't remove the pillow, right? Because the placing of the keys, that's clear to us that you're actually physically doing something. You're adding something. You're adding the keys. Whatever it is that the keys do, you're adding something. You're putting the keys there to cause him to die, right? So that one we can put aside and we can say, okay, that's clear to us why that's a problem. Because, you know, you're putting the keys there. The same way that you can't close his eyes because that will cause him to die, you can't put the keys there. Problem is, how do we distinguish between removing the pillow versus removing the salt on his mouth. So the Taz says that there's an easy out. Removing the pillow is a problem not because you're removing the monea, but actually because you're moving his head. When you remove the pillow, you're moving his head. And when you move his head, that could cause him to die. So the Taz has a very mechanical way of getting out of it. He says, when you remove the pillow, you're actually doing, you're adding something. You're moving his head. That could cause him to kill. You know, we all know that you're not supposed to move somebody when they're in danger. But he says, but what are we going to do with the removal of the salt? The salt is on his tongue. When you do that, you're going to move his mouth. So what does the Taz do? He says, I disagree with the Rama. I think you should not remove the melach. I don't think you should remove the salt because it could have the same effect as removing the pillow. So the Taz gets out of it, but he doesn't get out of it fully. He jumps in.
Might we say that removing the pillow is symbolically considering him to be dead because a dead person doesn't need a pillow?
Maybe. So psychologically, you mean? Okay. And what about removing the salt though? You'd be the same thing. He doesn't need the salt.
No. Salt is something that that people who are alive enjoy. That's something basic to life. People like salt.
People like
salt.
Okay.
No. Pillows were
so. Okay, so that's how the Taz deals with it. The Shach also quotes the Taz. It's called the Taz, Vitmihani. He doesn't. He quotes the Taz, and the Shach says, "I'm not bothered." So he kind of quotes, you know, the question of the Taz, ignores the fact that the Taz gave the same answer that he's about to give, and then ignores the other problem that the Taz brings up. So the Shach just says, "The only problem is to move the body." When you move the body, that's a problem. If you don't move the body, you're fine. Maybe he thinks that when you remove the melach, you're not moving the tongue. That's fine. Either way, according to the Shach, the only problem you could have is to move the body. That's what you're not allowed to do. The Aruch HaShulchan jumps in as well. And he basically says, he sums this up. He says, Mikodem yitbar she'enos in ma'aseh shal yidezeh yikarbu mitato. Kamo lishmot hakar mitachtav. And this is going to take us into the next section. Even if the person who's doing this is doing it because he thinks it's for the best, it's for removing the misery of the goseis. Kagon shu goseis is man aroch. V'rim sheyesh lo yisurim gedolim. Mikol makom asor lasot shum ma'aseh lazeh. Dekein hu ratzon Hashem yitbarach. This is God's will. And you're not allowed to change it. He says, and by the way, the keys, you're not moving him. You're not moving him when you put the keys down. So you see that you're not allowed to do any positive action to the person in order to make them expire more quickly. Why? Because that's the Ratzon Hashem. Omnam, however, in yesh davar min atzad, shemakev yitziyat hanefesh, if there's something on the side that's causing him to not die, mutar lahasiro, dimimah nefshach ima ikov mitzad zeh, lama yizbol, dalo zeh eino machmat etzem gufo. Because anyways, he's not remaining in his body because of something that's in his, that, you know, internally happening. It's because of something that's outside of him. So this seems to be what the Shach would say, that removing the melach is not considered moving the body, and it's considered a side effect. But he acknowledged that there are those that disagree and say that you can't even take away the salt. Okay, so that's, we got the Shulchan Aruch, we got the Ramah, we got the Shach and the Taz, we got the Aruch HaShulchan. Aruch HaShulchan brings us already into the 19th century, sorry, into the 20th century, to the 1900s. Now we're going to jump forward into, I guess, semi-contemporary times. We're already now going to go to the poskim that decided issues about modern day healthcare. Before we get there, anybody have anything they want to add?
I just have a question. It seems to me there are only two or three examples given there. Does that mean it's limited to those two or three?
No, or I think those two or three are examples.
Are just examples. So it's up to other people to say this is like this, but not like that. Which is kind of...
Well, that's what they're trying to figure out.
Freedom, right?
Well, that's what the Shach and the Taz is trying to figure out. And the Orach HaShulchan is nailing it down. He says, first of all, if you move the body at all, out of the question, cannot move the body at all. Can't do anything directly to the body. Second of all, if you do something that causes the person to die, you know, you add something to the equation, also a problem. What's in play? Removing something that's somehow defined as being a side issue, like the sound outside, or apparently like the salt on his tongue, which is a little bit harder to understand, which is why he's not sure you should do it. That's going to be okay, because that is only that you're just removing something that is not internal to the death process. You can't touch the death process itself.
What about, does anybody discuss what about the absence or presence of any people?
Yeah, I mean, the psychological effect of being there or not being there.
Yes.
They do discuss it. We're not going to talk about it tonight. But I don't think that would be considered an act of what we're talking about, which is basically Ritzicha. We should be clear. The things that we're talking about could rise to the level of cause Shofich Damim. Not necessarily on the level of murder per se, that you would be, you know, Yard Val Yavo or anything like that, but that's Shvichas Damim. I don't think we'd consider a person not showing up at the bedside to be Shvichas Damim. That wouldn't be even that. Okay, the Seder. So let's jump to our contemporary
post. It's very hard to understand why you can do anything, even to remove something. If you're going for the fact that the Kodesh Baruch Hu who's making a decision, then why does it matter? Why can you do anything? Salt, if the salt is on the tongue, the Kodesh Baruch Hu is what? He's leaving it up to us? What? We can prolong someone's life? Shorten it.
So it sounds like he's saying that Hashem, we would only attribute to Hashem the prolongation of his life and suffering if it was something internal to his physiology or pathology, whatever he's going through. But if his life is being prolonged because of something that's external to that, then that we don't attribute to Hashem's plan, so to speak. No, we don't. Yeah.
Is, you know, kind of, I understand that if you're saying Tehillim, nothing can happen. Okay, fine, because the Tehillim works, you know, also works, so to speak, on the Kadosh Baruch Hu. But the salt on the tongue works, affects the decision of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's hard to understand. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, yeah, I hear you. But this is his words. This is the best we're going to get. Because our Hashem is the one who says that the reason that you can't do this is because it's Hashem's plan. That's far from simple, that's really the explanation. But that's what he says. And so the explanation he gives for why you're allowed to remove an external monea is he says, Im yesh davar min hatzad shemakev yetziat hanefesh mutar lahasiro demim hanefshach. Im ha'ikuv mitzad zeh, lam yizbol da'alo zeh u'einu machmat etzem gufo. It sounds like etzem gufo, that's what's part of Hashem's plan, so to speak. But something that's outside of etzem gufo is not considered to be part of that plan. That's the best I can do, for now at least. Let's take a look at Rav Moshe Feinstein. So if you want to see, by the way, an excellent article on this, Rabbi Cohen, I have a link over here. He wrote an article which summarizes a lot of the major opinions. We're going to see a little bit more than what was in his article, because things have been written afterwards. But we're going to see basically what I guess I would say is four major opinions from the previous generation. And then hopefully if we have time, we'll look at what Rav Moshe Weiss has to say about this. So the four major opinions, just to outline, are going to be Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rav Eliezer Waldenberg, and the Stipler Gaon. And my nice little surprise is going to be the Stipler. So stick around. Nobody leave until you hear the Stipler. So the Igros Moshe, Rav Moshe Feinstein, has the most famous position over here, seeing as he was the major posek in America for 50 years. And he wrote a lot about this, and his words were taken very seriously. But he did something pretty amazing, okay? Just to remind ourselves, refresh our memory, you know, we had several stories in the Gemara about these issues, And they were just stories, right? There were things that happened. Typically, halakha is built out of mishnayot, gemara, discussions back and forth, conceptual arguments, tahor, tamei, pasul, tiyufta, havamina, etc., etc., etc. Not from stories. But Rav Moshe, you know, makes a left turn over here. He says, he's talking about inyan tefillah al achol hashayamut, prayer that a person should die. He wants to bring a proof from the maidservant of Rabbi. Binyan Minia Mehatfila. Okay, in Shaharan he's kier. Remember the Ran? The Ran brought this up. She's Karnu Mizalainyan Minia Militain Refua. Says he wants to take the Ran, who says that you're allowed to pray for the death of somebody who's suffering, and say that maybe we should use that to say that we should not give medicine, medical treatment to a person who's suffering. Ubavadai Raya Gadolahi says it's a good proof from the maidservant of Rabbi Kevin Shaitat Tfilatan Mikubelet Vaadif Migdole Torah Shalob Arur Kabbalat Tfilatan. Apparently, she did win that. We wondered last time whether or not we should look favorably on the maidservant of Rabbi. But this seems to be the what we should do, that she was right. Ulein Shikarabi Khanina Mendosa, Ukhadoma Shet Filatan Mikubelet Yasu Kipsakaran, Shiv Ain Tfilatan Mikubelet Yadua Lahel. Sometimes you have to pray for the death of the chole. But this is only in the case where you don't have somebody who can pray for the person to be completely healed. If you have a person in the generation who can pray for miracles, that the person should be completely healed, and then fine. But he says, but we don't know anybody like that. And since we don't know anybody like that, we can't do that. V'im yeshnam, yeshnam lasot kipsakaran, he says, and if there are, maybe we should have them pray like the Ran, that sometimes you have to pray for the death. Aval hurak b'tfilah, v'lo l'katzer yamim. He says, but nevertheless, this is only for tefillah. We should not, however, be makatzer yamim b'ma'aseh. We cannot b'maaseh cause a person to die earlier. Shezasur, afilu k'shu tovato shel nirtzach, the murderee, right? Even when it's for the good. V'chayev mitat sayef k'rotzeach misinah v'kas l'kavanat v'tzicha l'ra'ah. And he says that a person, a Dr. Kevorkian, a person who would perform euthanasia, even for a patient who wants the death, even a person if it's for their good, that person is a murderer. Dr. Kevorkian is a murderer. That's what the Rav Moshe starts with. Even though you can pray for the person's death, you cannot actually do anything to hasten it. Okay, that's step one. Over here in another tshuva, Rav Moshe does take step two. This is a tshuva that he writes to his son-in-law, Rav Moshe David Tendler. It says, Harachat chayetzar shel chole she'i afshar l'rafoto. Can you prolong the life of a person who cannot be healed? Says Ma Sheir Kfot Rato Al Hatshuva Shekatavti LaAchicha HaRav HaGaon Rav Shalom. Okay, so he wrote a tshuva to Rav Shalom, Tendler. B'chole Sartan, cancer. Shebederech Ateva I Efshar Shitrape Lechiot Chay Olam. Haynu Chayim Aragilim L'Stam Inshi B'Zmanenu Rak L'Zman Katzar. You have a person who has cancer, and they're only going to live for a short amount of time, even if you provide them with treatment. They will only live for a short amount of time. Leizeh chadashim. Im tzuchin muchyavin lerfato im hazman sheyechya yehiyu chayitzar. Okay, this is masim b'kol yom. You have a person who has advanced stage cancer. There's no hope that the person will be healed completely, but there's a hope that you can prolong their life for a few months using chemotherapy or some other treatment. But, of course, those months will be months of suffering. What is the proper thing to do? Should you provide that treatment? You don't have to provide the treatment. I mean, if you don't provide the treatment, the person will die earlier. Or should you, like we said, you should withhold that treatment if the person, let's say, assuming the person doesn't want it. Hine, lefi ma shenitbar, gam lerapei besamei mirpash, v'yavshar, el harichi mechol, el meshach zman, ke'adua, shelo merapein ela shemorilin hasamei refua, el harichi mechol. We know that these drugs do not actually heal the person. They simply remove the pain and prolong the life. You ask the patient. You provide the patient with knowledge. You tell them these are your options. You can either take the therapy and live a bit longer with pain, or don't. If he says, yes, I want it, you have to give it to him. If he says, no, I don't want it, you don't have to give it to him.
If the patient is not in any condition to respond.
Okay, we'll get that.
Is, all right. Yeah. My other point is, he's saying you ask the patient whether you want us to administer the medication. You're not asking the patient whether you want us to pull a plug or something like that.
No. However, he says, Rav Moshe says, if however, he says, if you know that there's a doctor out there who can heal him, and I guess the corollary to that would be if you know that there's a drug maybe that's being developed that they hope can heal him, and it will be ready soon enough that the doctor or the new drug can show up if you prolong his life for a few weeks, a few months, then you have to give him the medicine. He's not allowed to forego that. So again, to just recap, bullet points. Rav Moshe says, if you have a person who's very sick, for example, with late stage cancer, and there's the only thing that the current drugs can do is prolong his life bitsa'ar, then you don't have to administer the drugs unless the person A, wants to continue his life for a little bit longer, or B, you have a reasonable assumption that another doctor might be able to help him or give another opinion, or you have a new drug that would be able to heal him. I'm adding that one. So that's how Rav Moshe rules. So Rav Moshe rules essentially that if the person doesn't want it, you don't have to provide that treatment. It's up to the patient. That's Rav Moshe Feinstein's position. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach's position is similar. He says, you have a yalda cholanit bat amito, she can undergo a treatment where she actually would be catatonic for the rest of her life. She would be in a coma for the rest of her life if she goes through the treatment. And we don't even know if the treatment will actually help her. I don't know what the sickness is. He thinks it's better in that situation. He's saying in a vacuum, it's better in that situation to not do the operation. If there's a risk that she's going to be comatose, and anyways, there's not really a surefire way of knowing that it will work to provide her with a prolonged life even, then it's better not to do it. And he says, even though chayim shel mishutakim lo aleinu, einam klal chayim lefi hamusagim hapshutim shelanu. He says, I want to acknowledge that even though we don't think that the life of a person who is comatose is a life at all, we may not think, and it's harder for his family as well. Nevertheless, if you have in front of you a person who's comatose or paralyzed or whatever, you have to prolong that person's life. Meaning if they're already on a respirator, etc., then you maintain them on that respirator. And you're mechala Shabbos for that person. Because we can't put a value or a measure on a person's life. And even when they don't have Torah mitzvahs because they're comatose, we cannot quantify the value of life. So we are mechala Shabbos even for a meshutak. And he says, and even if a person is telling you that they don't want to live. They're mitzta'er harbe. And they say, I don't want to live anymore. Right? Mitzad halacha, mitzvah lavakesh alav sheyamut. And even if they're in a situation where, as he quotes the Ran, just like the Ramosha says, where you can even pray for that person. If they're telling you, I don't want to live, so you can pray that Hashem, please take him. Mikol makom gam ba'ota sha'a shemavakesh mitvalel Hashem shacholei amut. Gam ken chayavu litasek ba'atzalato l'chalav at shabbat afilu kama pa'amim. You nevertheless have to be mechalal shabbat and try to save that person. Don't have so much time, so we can't read the whole thing. He says, and while it's true that we don't have to do anything bekumva asay, meaning we don't have to provide any extra treatment to the person, says he thinks that here he gives kind of hard directives. You have to give him food and oxygen, but you don't have to give him medicine that will cause an extra tsar, but will save him. You don't have to give that to him. So medicine you don't have to provide, but food and oxygen you always have to provide. Okay, so that's how Rav Shlomo Zalman is pretty close to Rav Moshe in saying that you can certainly pray for the person's death and you don't have to go out of your way to save them, but you still have to provide them with basic things like food and oxygen, and you definitely can't do anything lema'aseh to take away the person's life. Okay, so those are two, you know, Torah giants that was their position. Lumat zeh. The Tzitz Eliezer, Eliezer Waldenberg, who passed away, I think, probably 20 years ago. But he lived at the same time. He corresponded with Rav Moshe, corresponded with Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rav Avadya Yosef. And he absolutely happened to be, I believe, the chief posek for Shari Tzedek. A large chunk of his tshuvas are medical tshuvas, are about the nexus of halacha and medicine. He has a very different approach. For example, over here, the konda damadubar b'hatzala from pikuach nefesh is when we're talking about pikuach nefesh. Late din tzarich boshesh shemchuyavim lasot afilu neged ratzono amuklat shel chole. You have to do even against the desire, the explicit desire of a chole, to help him. The osin kol atzarich pikuach nefesh neged ratzono shel chole. Chol adam uzar al kach b'shem lo tamal adam reyecha. Vein adavar tel b'dat toshel chole. Vein onotan b'rshuto la'ben atmo yu. Under no circumstances can you allow him to do anything that will shorten his life, and you have every obligation to extend his life as much as possible. So if that means chemotherapy, if it means some kind of surgery, everything, if it means that the person is even going to be mishutak, as he's going to say, it doesn't matter what, you can never do anything to shorten the person's life, and you have to do everything to elongate the person's life. This is a much longer tshuva over here, and he has some very strong language. Just wanted to read some of it to you. He quotes the Aruch HaShulchan that we saw before, Yoel, the one that you picked up on, that the whole purpose over here is that you're not allowed to cause a person to die early because this was Hashem's plan. And he says, "Afilu k'shanu ro'im shemitzta'er harbe v'tov lo hamavet," that it would be better for him to die in our eyes. We have no right to get involved in the calculations of Hashem. We have to always try to save the person's life. And if he dies, he dies. But we have to do our best. And he says, and a person doesn't even have the right to say, I want to die, because his body is not his own. This is a basic idea that he puts forth over here. A person's body is not his own. So he's not allowed to say, I want to die. Right? He can say it, but he can't do anything about it because it's not his life to take. The basic idea that the Tzitz Eliezer brings down. He also quotes later on, he quotes the Chatam Sofer. The Chatam Sofer talks about a person who commits suicide and talks about how even if a person commits suicide because he's under tremendous pain, he's considered a rotzeach. He's a murderer. He killed himself, even if it's because of tremendous pain. And he says, the Chatam Sofer says, that the reason that it's such a problem to commit suicide is because Boto korban v'kapara gdola shehamita boto atzmo chata v'chis tamarim v'ratzach az et atzmo v'chia kapara klab b'mitato v'hi asher ha'ala alav charonaf Hashem. This is because the suffering that he's going through at this point, that the person who commits suicide is going through, perhaps he's supposed to go through the suffering because this is the kapara that he needs at the end of his life, and by shortening his life, ending his suffering early, he's thwarting the kapara that he was supposed to get. That's what the Chachatam Sofer says over there. And the Titz Eliezer takes that and he says, he turns that on us. And he says, by what right do you end the person's life who's suffering by not treating them, when perhaps that suffering that they're going through is actually for their ultimate benefit? It's a really harsh and radical theological statement. But this is what he says. Shagam habshachat achayim akruchim b'yisarim lo'alinu nechshov lo la'adam kizchut. Because perhaps the suffering that he's going through at the end of his life can be in some way a zchut la'atid lavo in his olam haba. Not the kind of thing that I would necessarily say to somebody or to the family, but Titz Eliezer says it and he takes it very, very seriously. He speaks much more poetically than Rav Moshe or Shlomo Zalman did. If you look, he says, "Apitarat Sinai, gam chayi tzar v'yisuri machala asher ein miflat miminu, ein o mekanim ve'ein amershim l'shum adam kol zchut shehi l'katzer avur kein chayim adam hazeh." No matter how much tzar you're going through, it doesn't give you the right to shorten your life. Anybody who shortens the life of a person who still has breath in their lungs, gam imit atef betalit shel chemla, even if they wrap themselves in a cloak of mercy and love, ubaderet shel asiyat chesed, bekitzur savlo shel nagua, they feel like they're acting with mercy and compassion. There's no difference between them and a murderer. None of us have the right or the balut on another person's life. They're both gama adam asmo, even the person himself. We cannot make any decisions that this person's life needs to be ended. This is the shita of the Titz Eliezer. Okay? Very different from Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman Aruch, who gave, you know, permission at least to the patient. Okay, now we get to the letter of the Stipler Gaon. Okay? So I'm just going to read this part first, and then I'll give you a little bit of the background that's so amazing that we're reading it this week. He writes, these words are quoted all over the place. Usher Weiss quotes them. Everybody quotes them. Bikara Yisrael, the Stipler Gaon was Yaakov Yisrael Kanievsky. Okay? The father, Rav Chaim Kanievsky. And he says, Bikar HaYesod, says, the whole idea, to call Mashiach Shal Hari Chaye Achole, that as much as possible, we should try to prolong the life of a sick person, Afinu Elochala Elochaisha, even if it's only going to be for a short amount of time. Tzrichim Lasot. I also heard this when I was a young child, when I was a kid. And I don't know if the person who said it was really somebody who should rely on. He says, I'm not sure this is right. That's what we read. Yo, this is what you were talking about. It says there clearly that you're allowed to take away something that prevents the person from dying. And you're only not allowed to do something to the person's body. To do something that's sheva altasa, that you're just not going to do something to save them. I don't see what the problem is. You're not supposed to put the salt on to prolong the gesisa. The stipler seems to say that you should not prolong a person's life if they are bitzar. So this, he's in the Rav Moshe camp, even saying that you should lechatchila not do something like that. Now, why do I say it's so amazing that we're reading this now? This is quoted all over the place, like I said, but in no place did I ever see it quoted who he wrote this letter to until this week. I was reading on svarmblog.com, which is a very interesting blog that brings up all kinds of scholarly issues. And it was an article about Rav Avram, Abram J. Tversky and his contribution to medical halachic literature. He was a psychiatrist, so you know he wasn't a surgeon or anything like that. This letter is published in many places, but one of the places is in the Sefer called Sefer Ya'amer Le'Yakov Yisrael, which is a collection of Hebrew writings by Rabbi Tversky, including letters that were written from him to Rav Kanievsky, a stipler, and back. This letter was written to Rabbi Tversky because Rabbi Tversky wrote a letter to the stipler. Originally, Rabbi Tversky wrote a letter to the stipler to ask if it was okay for him to give injections to his father, who was ailing at the time, because he's his father's son. He wanted to know whether it was a violation of Kibbutz Ava'im or whether he should get somebody else to do it, to give injections to his father. That's why it starts with Bidvar Zrika La'av Chole. Shitachen Shiasach Abur Kvar Mubur Adin B'Yardei. The truth is, it's not a problem at all. The Beleka Acher Mutar, that if there's nobody else who can do it, then you can do it. The thing is that from the time that he wrote the letter, from the time Rabbi Tversky wrote the letter to Rav Stipler, and from until the time that the Stipler responded, Rabbi Tversky's father had already passed away, which is why it says, HaMakom Yinachem Etchem V'chol Mishpacha Kvoda V'Rabama. Okay, but this paragraph over here, which was written by the stipler, which like I said, this is a tremendous contribution to the literature of end of life halacha. This was actually written to Rabbi Abraham J. Tversky, who passed away this past week. And nobody that I saw mentioned this. Nobody saw it was worthy of mention until I saw this in its firm blog where they pointed it out this week. Pretty cool, no? Am I the only one who thinks that's cool? Okay, I thought it was cool. Okay, just to finish off, Rav Asher Weiss quotes the opinions of Rav Moshe, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and the Stipler. He doesn't even really mention Bitzitzi Eliezer, and he says, "Arei lan da'atam shel shlosha migdoli hador, amudei ha-Torah, b'chol bit Yisrael she'en chiyuv la'arich yimei sablo shel chole, mityaser ulenateach adam ba'ofen she'etz ha-manituach yigrom lo l'chayis sevel, lo tikvah lo yitvapot." The opinion of these three gedolim is that you don't have to provide medical care or surgery to a person who's suffering if the situation is that they're going to suffer even more because of the surgery. But the he says, I am surprised. He says, I'm surprised because Rav Yaakov Emden wrote years ago that you're not supposed to listen to the person, to the patient himself. But nevertheless, this was their position. He brings up issues with this, but in the end, he rules. He was dealing with his own case. He was talking about a case where the person would have to amputate. That's what it was. They were talking about amputation of a limb. So it's a little bit of a different question. They wanted to do amputation. They weren't sure it was going to work, and it was going to be very painful. The patient himself didn't want to do it. Said, I don't want to live without a limb. I don't want to live without that limb that they're going to take away from me. So he said that the person does not have to undergo that surgery.
I find it interesting that he quantifies Ben Shloshim
L'Arba'im Achuz. Yeah, that's fine. This just leads into the end of the shiur. It's all right. I'm on mute and invisible.
So
Barbara, you're not on.
Well, now she is. Now she's on me. But you were invisible, don't worry. So yeah, he does. He gives the 30-40%. I'm not sure how important that is. I think it's just to point out that that it's not even clear that he's going to survive even if they do the amputation.
I have a practical question. I guess you would call it practical halachics. If the Tzitz Eliezer did a lot of tshuvot for Shaarei Tzedek, when was that?
It would be in the latter half of the 20th century. He passed away, I think, in 2003 or 4 or something. I was in YU when he passed away.
Okay, and so my question is, since then, do they in Shaarei Tzedek still use his psak? Is the person who now...
I don't know.
Is the posek at Shaarei Tzedek able, comfortable?
The answer to that is definitely yes.
To use to change and to use their own psakim.
So the answer to that is definitely yes, because as far as I understood, the current posek of Shaarei Tzedek is Rav Asher Weiss. And he does what he wants. So the answer to that is definitely yes. I also don't even know if just because the Tzitz Eliezer wrote this tshuva, if this was necessarily the policy that they always followed in Shaarei Tzedek. I'm not sure. I don't know if it worked like that. Like anything he wrote in a tshuva, that's what they did in Shaarei Tzedek. I don't really know how it functionally worked. Just know that he was considered the main posek, the person that they went to when they had to get a shaila answered. And I think before him it was Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. So I think, yeah. So I mean, the answer to your question actually might be that it was a much shorter time than I thought, but I'm not totally certain. All right.